This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen here with you. Well, death is inevitable, but most people live in denial of this fact. So there remains a strong reluctance to prepare for this inevitability by letting your family and loved ones know your wishes around the end of life. Joining us with more on this and the importance of this kind of planning are Dr. Robert Olick, Associate Professor of Bioethics and Humanities and the Chair of the Ethics Committee at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Thomas Curran, Assistant Professor of Bioethics and Humanities at Upstate Medical University and the Chair of the Ethics Consulting Service at Upstate and at Krauss Hospital in Syracuse. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So planning for the end of life obviously is something that people try to avoid. What are the kinds of stumbling blocks or issues have you seen in this whole process?
Well, discussing your death is never a comfortable subject. People just assume not think about it frequently. However, it does point out the importance of if you don't have a plan for how you want your end of life plan to work out, you will be left to the vagaries of other folks considering what they would like to do in that situation. And it points out the importance of designating a healthcare proxy. And a healthcare proxy is probably one of the most important people you can have in your life because it's someone who you love and trust to make decisions for you, not what they would do, but what you would want done. And it is not a complicated process. You don't need a lawyer. You just need to designate someone. These forms are available online. The New York State forms available online. You need two witnesses, and you need to talk with this person about what you want to have done in the case that you lose decisional capacity and you have a serious medical situation.
And it does it mean that you're at the end of life, or can it mean that you just can't be mentally competent at that time to make decisions about your health care?
The healthcare proxy only comes into play when you have lost decisional capacity. And if you have decisional capacity, you call the shots. But as we all know, none of us plan on losing decisional capacity. That's something that is sprung upon you invariably.
So it's crucial, Dr. Olick, then, to have this kind of planning. They tend to lump a lot of these concepts into a term called advanced directives. What are the components of this? Obviously, designating the healthcare proxy is key to starting the whole process.
Right. So advanced directive is really sort of a generic term for several types of approaches one could take to planning ahead for healthcare decisions that would be made on your behalf and in accordance with your wishes, but at a time when you're not able to make those decisions for yourself. So in New York, we have the healthcare proxy document, which, as Tom just said, is designed to allow you to designate someone you trust to make decisions for you when the time comes. There also is a living will, which by contrast sets forth with more specificity what your wishes would be in the future.
Give me some examples of what you find in a living will, though. I mean, do they help you along with what some of these decisions might be? For example, do you want to be on a feeding tube, or would you want to be sustained after you couldn't breathe by being put on some kind of a pump or a breathing pump?
Right. A living will could say any or all of those things. So there are two types of things you could say. One would be the types of conditions, a quality of life that you would find unacceptable and not want to continue on life-sustaining interventions. And that might be emphasizing, for example, that if you should lose the capacity to interact meaningfully with your family, that you would not want to continue in that condition. Another approach would be to designate specific interventions that you wouldn't want, whether that would be a respirator or a feeding tube. One of the downsides of that approach is that it can sort of lock you in to an anticipated future, because these are all approaches to anticipating something that will happen in the future, which haven't happened yet.
How do they lock you in?
Because then you're reading a document, and both your family and your doctor need to figure out whether those instructions fit the circumstances that you're currently in.
So the point is that at the point at which, in real time, you make that decision, put pen to paper, those circumstances could change at the time you really need the document. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. And that's one of the reasons that many people recommend that you have a healthcare proxy, because the proxy is in a position essentially to stand in the shoes of you as the patient and interact with the doctor and make decisions on your behalf in accordance with your wishes, responding to the current circumstances that you're in.
But that also implies to me that that proxy really has had long and in-depth conversations with you and knows you well enough to really be able to, in a sense, see the changing circumstances and react accordingly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we talk about choosing someone you trust, whether it's your spouse or an adult child or a friend or a religious advisor, and the law gives you broad discretion in terms of who you would choose. But that's not always the same thing as having the conversation. So it is important to have that conversation with the person you're choosing to make decisions for you so they know what your wishes would be.
So what is a durable power of attorney, and how does that play a role in this whole advanced directive picture?
Well, sometimes a durable power of attorney can be used for healthcare decisions and financial decisions, but most of the time the durable power of attorney document is something that's more targeted towards financial decisions.
So bottom line is we're talking about a living will, we're talking about having designated a healthcare proxy. Are those sufficient, though, in terms of, I mean, I have been at one point told that you need to have in place, first of all, these vary from state to state, but the things that you're determining right or discussing right now are specific to New York State at this point.
Yes.
With our current law. What more could you use or what more would you need? For example, what is a DNR, a do not resuscitate, and where does that fit in as an order?
Well, when you want to make your document some of your wishes for end-of-life care, you can fill out a form called a MOLST form here in New York State, which is basically a directive that travels with you. You can reiterate who your healthcare proxy is in that. There's selections for what conditions you'd like to be resuscitated under. DNRs, do not resuscitate.
That's part of it.
That's part of it. And so that's something that if your heart stops, do you want to be coded? Do you want to have medications given and chest compressions given and that sort of thing? There's also a section for do not intubate, which explores the situations under which you'd like to be on a respirator or not. And so it's a way of kind of pulling together what your thoughts are in addition to naming your healthcare proxy, who will be able to facilitate you having your wishes respected.
But it's also put in the form of a doctor's order so it can be executed without question.
Yes, doctors will sign off on the MOLST form as being a valid representation of your wishes.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen along with bioethicists Dr. Robert Olick and Dr. Thomas Curran. We're talking about the importance of advanced directives and end-of-life planning. So what I think people worry about quite often, even if they have the forethought or the courage to have these conversations and put these things in place, I think the whole concept of the legality of it, do you need, for example, to have these forms notarized? Do you need a lawyer to help you write these forms? You were clear about the healthcare proxy idea. That's pretty straightforward. But the living will, for example, or the MOLST form. And then, can these be changed? And when can you change them? And if you were in the hospital, for example, and had these papers in place in your medical record, or the MOLST form went with you from perhaps, let's say, an assisted living facility to the hospital, and then you perhaps were still in clear enough mind to say, you know what, I've changed my mind. Can you and how do you make that kind of verbal change to these types of things?
Well, I talked about the living will is an if this, then that type document. And so it's very specific. And that limits it in many instances. Whereas the healthcare proxy is more of an on-the-fly, take all circumstances into consideration and make a decision that you think the person would want to have made for them. And so it just speaks, and you don't need a lawyer to designate a healthcare proxy, and you don't need a lawyer to fill out a MOLST form. And I think there's this misperception that lawyers need to be involved in order to make these documents, and it serves as a barrier to getting them. And you do not need a lawyer for those. Living will, sometimes people involve lawyers just because it has a lot of, well, they do, but it's not necessary.
So if you were to choose, I guess, or Dr. Olick, did you have some other comment about that? You're a lawyer.
Well, I would add that the law with respect to the sort of formalities of making it a legally valid document is pretty uniform across the country.
Do you need to be notarized?
You do not need a notary. Two signatures is usually typical, as well as the signature, you know, two witnesses and the signature of the patient. That makes the document valid. And if you, for example, another sort of uniform rule is if you live in one state, you're in the hospital in another, your document is to be respected wherever you are.
And they can be changed.
And they can be changed.
Absolutely.
So it's the one that's dated most currently that's the one that's most, that's in force, so to speak. But if you were to, you know, need to change something verbally at the last minute, let's say, could you do so?
Right. So you'd have a few issues that might come up there. So first of all, that's correct, that the general rule would be that the most recent document would take precedence and would invalidate the earlier document. That may not be the case if one document is a healthcare proxy and the other document is a living will and they're written at different times.
Right. I meant
then
the
you
same,
have to
yeah.
figure that out in consultation with the family, for example. You can change the document at any time as long as you're competent to do so. And also, as was mentioned earlier, if you have capacity to make your own decisions, if you're competent, then your wishes count and the healthcare proxy or the living will do not apply until you lose that ability.
Now, there's some new law in New York State, relatively new law the last 4 or 5 years. Tell us about that, Dr. Curran.
So the Family Health Care Decisions Act was passed back in 2010, and that makes provisions for alternative surrogate decision makers to be brought in if the patient has lost decisional capacity and has not previously appointed a healthcare proxy. Prior to that, it was a mess trying to figure out who could make decisions, medical decisions, for these people who did not have a healthcare proxy form. And so now there's a pecking order that's been developed where you go through with your various relationships with you. So your spouse would have first be first in line to make decisions for you, then an adult child, then a parent. By the way, I don't get that one because I want my mom and dad to make decisions for me, not my adult children, but that's another thing.
You mean the order that was determined.
Yes, exactly. My kids, are you kidding me? Sibling, and then lastly is an other friend or relative. And I've had a case where someone who had not appointed a healthcare proxy, their closest relation they could find to them was someone who was in a book club with them. Mm. But they knew them very, very well, and this person was able to make medical decisions, a book club associate.
Well, they were a good friend.
They were
obviously
a wonderful friend.
Yes.
So this legislation has really helped people have their wishes be respected, even without the appropriate documentation.
So the bottom line here, I mean, you've almost alluded to the fact that living will could almost get in your way. I guess, what would you say are the most crucial, just to kind of sum it all up, what are the key points you want to make? Also, I guess I want to make this point. This is good. This is something everyone should have, not just people who are in their last decade of life or the last year of life.
If you're older than 18.
Everyone, because right. people can have auto accidents. Any number of things could happen. And you really want to have something in place so that you can be cared for in the way you think you'd like to be. So what's the bottom line?
Well, to exactly that point, there are several important reasons to do this. One is to ensure that your wishes are going to count and control decisions that are made for you when you're unable to make decisions for yourself. A second is to give assurance and guidance to family members and to physicians about what your wishes would be. And in doing so, to relieve some of the burdens on family members that would occur if they didn't know what your wishes are, because their obligation, whether they're designated as proxy or whether they're acting as family members without that piece of paper, is going to be to try to make the decision that you would choose for yourself
so
if able to do so.
The most essential component is the healthcare proxy and the most, perhaps, in
well,
this state?
I would say the healthcare proxy and talking to your family and your doctor.
So you don't need the legal, you don't need the living will.
No, no.
As an essential
healthcare proxy is absolutely the way to go in New York State.
Very good. Thank you so much. Difficult conversations to have, but very, very crucial. My guests have been Dr. Robert Olick, Associate Professor of Bioethics and Humanities and the Chair of the Ethics Committee at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Thomas Curran. He's Assistant Professor of Bioethics and Humanities at Upstate University and the Chair of the Ethics Consulting Service for Upstate and the Krauss Hospital in Syracuse. Once again, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.